Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Good afternoon, everyone, and thank you again for being here and those of you at home for tuning in or listening to this press briefing. I guess to some degree we've got a little bit of good news, and that is that the case count that we announced today at noon is not as drastic as the one we saw yesterday, but it is still very concerning. Today's case increase is 1,147. As opposed to the one yesterday that actually exceeded 2,700. However, we did reach a grim milestone because we now have more than 10,000 cases statewide, 10,297 to be exact. Sadly, we also had an increase of 60 deaths. The total number of deaths statewide is now 370. What we're seeing today, we think, is going to look more like the daily normal going forward. Although we do know that there are still certain test results that are lagging behind, but the 13% increase in cases today is a much more that increase is much more in line with what we expect to see day to day, not the 42% that we saw yesterday, and that's really what I'm trying to communicate to you. But the rate of spread, the number of cases, will always depend upon the degree to which our people are complying with the stay-at-home order, with all of the social distancing guidelines that we're putting out, and minimizing social contact. We knew and have been telling people for a long time that getting through this crisis would resemble a marathon, not a sprint. So I'm again asking people to be patient, to stay in their homes and take the stay-at-home order seriously. Your neighbor's life depends on it, and quite frankly, so might your own. Another bit of good news is that with 53,645 tests to date, Louisiana's second in the nation per capita. This is important because it does help us to see what's out there and gives us a better idea of how to respond and prepare for the future. There are interesting new tools and dashboards that are popping up that are trying to capture whether folks are actually social distancing or not, like Google, which just came out with its community mobility reports. And what its report shows is that Louisiana and our people started to take this seriously around the time of the end of March, which is when I announced an emergency declaration. You can see this is goes back to March the 29th, and you can see the graph there. And so we know then, to the degree to which this activity reduced, that the mitigation measures were working and that the spread of the disease was actually slowed. It would be there would be more cases in Louisiana today had we not done that, and that's very clear. There's other social distancing dashboard by Unicast out there, which is based on aggregated cell phone data that shows that there are still a lot of Louisianans who are not taking this seriously, not complying. And perhaps it is because for some reason I have not impressed upon all of our citizens the consequences, the dire consequences of not staying at home. And you can see there's some bright spots out there because Orleans Parish gets an A, which is incredibly important because that is one of the biggest hotspots in the country. But you see that Jefferson Parish gets a B, so they're doing relatively well, and Bossier also. But you see there's large parts of the state that are not doing well, and I'm encouraging everyone to take stock of this. As we mentioned before, this is a statewide problem with respect to the novel coronavirus and the COVID-19 disease. I think it is now in all but three of our parishes by test result, but it is in all of our parishes in actuality. So this is a statewide problem. We need everyone paying more attention to the stay-at-home order and being more compliant. You know, modeling is something that we've talked a lot about, and it's been talked about at the national level. And I know a couple of nights ago, or maybe three nights ago now, that from the White House they did a press briefing where they put up some modeling, several different models, as I recall. But it's essential that we use modeling to determine how we can best respond to COVID, but also to illustrate to the people how they should best be responding to this, and that is through those mitigation measures that we've been talking about. It helps us to know what we can expect to need in terms of beds and ventilators, and when we might expect that we're going to exceed our capacity in certain regions to deliver life-saving health care. So today we're going to go through a chart with you to help you better understand how the mitigation measures, the social distancing measures, the stay-at-home order, are impacting our communities by slowing the rate of spread. And we're going to specifically focus on Region 1, which is the New Orleans area, because that is where we have the greatest data to analyze. That means the modeling is more mature. And certainly we are working to develop the same information for all the regions of our state, but this is the one that we have today that we wanted to go through with you. This modeling is a collaborative effort between the Department of Health, LSU, the University of Louisiana at Lafayette, Ochsner Health, and Blue Cross Blue Shield of Louisiana. As I mentioned, the two data points that we get every day that are most reliable and tell us with the most precision where we are on these curves is the number of individuals hospitalized with COVID-19 and those individuals who've died from the disease. These are the numbers that tell us how much COVID is in our state and do that to a better degree than the actual number of positive cases, because we know that there are a number of individuals out there who are going to be COVID-19 positive, but they're not going to be symptomatic, and they're not going to go get a test, although they can continue to spread the disease. So we have indications, quite frankly, that are giving us some hope, a glimmer of hope. It's still early. But we do know that the amount of compliance that we're getting, it is not enough in order to have the best possible outcome. So to those of you out there who are complying, thank you very much. I sincerely appreciate, and the overwhelming majority of the state of Louisiana sincerely appreciates what you're doing. You really are helping. But for those of you who are not taking the crisis seriously, I'm asking you to do a better job. Again, the life that you save could be your own. As I've said before, we're not going to enforce our way out of the crisis. It's going to take everyone doing their part by staying apart from others to help us flatten the curve and slow the spread. The death rate in Louisiana is higher than anywhere else in the country. But we are getting much closer to the norm, because what we're finding out is we actually have much more COVID in our state than we previously thought. And so the death rate isn't from COVID isn't that much out of the ordinary. But we do have a higher death rate, and I suspect at the end of this, we're going to still have a higher death rate than most places because we have underlying health problems in a larger proportion of our population, including those chronic health conditions that make people especially vulnerable to this disease and make them more prone to succumbing to it, such as kidney disease, heart disease, obesity, hypertension, diabetes, those sorts of things. Now, Dr. Biyu, who's been with us every day as Assistant Secretary of the Office of Public Health, he's going to go through the chart and explain in more detail what that chart is telling us here and what it should be telling each of the citizens of our state. Yesterday, in addition to extending the stay-at-home order until April the 30th, I also signed a proclamation to ensure that high school seniors and current post-secondary students are able to meet the requirements to be eligible for TOPS or to be eligible for the continuation of TOPS, whichever the case may be. Among the things that this order does is extend the qualifying ACT score deadline to September the 30th. Also, on an important note, for small businesses that need relief, and there are many of them out there, as a result of this crisis, if you haven't already, you should immediately apply for SBA loans. If you're interested in doing so, time really is of the essence because there's a finite amount that was appropriated by Congress and signed into law a week ago today. Although it's a large amount, $350 billion, it is finite. And I think as you see more businesses around the country apply for these loans, that amount is going to dwindle down. And so we're encouraging people to go to SBA.gov, go to SBA.gov and fill out an application for the Paycheck Protection Program. This is a loan designed to provide direct incentives for small businesses to keep their workers on payroll. And the SBA will forgive the loan. And this is really important because it's a loan at first, but it can be forgiven. If employees are kept on the payroll for 8 weeks and the money is used for payroll, rent, mortgage interest, or utilities. So to find out more, please go to SBA.gov. I'd also like to remind everyone that yesterday we launched a text alert system that will provide timely COVID-19 updates and other critical guidance directly through the governor's office. To sign up, if you want more of this information, please text LA COVID to 67283. LA COVID to 67283. Already, more than 100,000 people across the state have signed up for alerts. Additional information and resources are available at coronavirus.la.gov. Coronavirus.la.gov. So at this point, I'm going to ask Dr. Biyu to come up and explain more about the chart that was up there with the modeling, because I know that some of you have been wanting to hear more information about our modeling.
Thank you, Governor. So as the governor said, almost since the earliest cases in the state, we've been working at the department and with partners both in the academic side and health systems and health insurers to build a model that would really let us understand what we should expect and how to predict what COVID-19 would mean for the state, especially when it comes to our most important healthcare resources that we know would need to be there for those most severely affected by COVID-19, and that's hospital beds and ventilators. And you've been hearing us talk a lot about those. You also, as the governor noted, recently heard from the national leadership in the White House about a model that they released. This model was focused on looking at the number of cases across the nation on a daily basis and using essentially fitting that to a mathematical equation to see how things are changing over time. So in the model that we're sharing here, this is slightly different from that because this is a model that's based on the actual dynamics of the way the infection works. This is really the standard way that we in public health look at an epidemic. It essentially models out a population that's susceptible to infection and then looks at as that population changes and becomes infected, we see these numbers start to rise. And then eventually it reaches a peak where there's nobody else to be infected easily. And those people are then removed from the model, either because, as most people are with this illness, they recover and they are better, or unfortunately, as 370 Louisianans have, they die and are no longer able to be infected. And that's why you see the model come down, or the lines come down. So essentially what this image depicts are a variety of scenarios for the state, depending on how we react to COVID-19 to stop the spread of the virus. Importantly, because we don't have a vaccine and because we don't have treatments that we know can stop COVID-19, our only weapon that we really have is social distancing and staying at home, not coming into contact with somebody with COVID-19. We know from international, national data, and state data that on average, if an individual has COVID-19, they're at risk of transmitting that to anywhere between 2 and 3 people, other people who can then go on to infect 2 to 3 other people. And so left unchecked, that leads to a really rapid rise in cases. And if we look at this graph, the thin red line there that says baseline depicts that scenario, where anybody who has the virus is really not doing much beyond potentially staying home if they're severely ill to stop the spread of the virus. And what you can see on this graph is that we're plotting the daily hospitalizations, number of new hospitalizations on the vertical axis. And then we're showing you time starting in March with our first cases and going through till March of the next year. So this is a year-long look. I mean, we look at that baseline. If we had done nothing, what we see is that by about early May, end of April, we would be in a situation, again, in Region 1. So these are the hospitals in St. Bernard, Plaquemines, Orleans, and Jefferson Parish, where they'd be seeing upwards of 3,700 to 3,800 hospitalizations a day. These are not total hospitalized. These are people needing to be hospitalized every day. And the day before that, it was 3,600. So these numbers are staggering. And then obviously at a certain point, it would decrease. Unfortunately, we know that the capacity in our region would not be able to accept that. And so that's a situation where we have a lot of people showing up to the hospital, hospitals not having access to the needed therapies like ventilators that they need, and high levels of people unfortunately passing away, higher than we're seeing. So fortunately, though, we've taken measures and through the governor's orders to change how likely it is that any one person with COVID is to infect somebody else. Again, it's incumbent on us to actually act on those orders, to not go out and connect with other people or spread the virus. That's what's depicted here on the other graph. So I'm going to first take you to the blue line. And that right next to it says effective social distancing. So if you remember, shortly after we had our first week of cases, we put in force social distancing rules. So this means people were encouraged to stay home when they were sick. They were encouraged to wash their hands, cough and sneeze into your elbows, and most importantly, stay 6 feet away from people and not have big gatherings. Initially 250 people or less, and then we moved to 50 and now less than 10. So what that graph depicts is what happens to hospitalizations if we just did that. And what we can see is it not only decreases the peak, but it pushes it further away. So the peak moves now out to mid-May. And now rather than 3,700 or 3,800 a day, what we're seeing is about 1,500 hospitalizations a day in the New Orleans area, the Region 1 area. Again, that is a large number to sustain. Following that, a week later, we had the strict shelter in place. And again, now what we've added on top of what I just described is a situation where all of you are hopefully staying home and not going out unless you're an essential worker, not going out unless you have an essential visit. And that doesn't mean every day. That means as needed, going to get things like groceries, gas, going to the pharmacy. And while you're out, taking these same common sense measures, staying 6 feet apart, not bunching up in lines, gatherings down to less than 10. And importantly, for anybody who's sick or has symptoms, you're not leaving at all. You're asking somebody else to bring things to your house, and you're really staying in place. In that scenario, what we see is even further pushing out the peak and really decreasing the number of new hospital admissions. There we see the peak is being pushed out really to early July. And at the peak point of admissions, we're seeing about 500 a day. Again, that is a large number of admissions for the hospitals to sustain, but much different than seeing 3,700, 3,800. So that's why we've been pushing so much for this policy, because it's really what's going to allow us to continue to push the day away to no vents, push the day away to no beds, and allow the surge activities that the governor's put in place to be able to absorb that extra admission strain that we're seeing. So if I go back to the chart, the black bold line that says current midpoint is showing you where we currently project that we are. And this is because COVID-19, we know people who have this infection can be infectious for up to 2 weeks. And so we really have to give a 2-week period to see these policies actually have an impact on numbers. And so we're sort of tracking along as people have been doing the work that you saw with the heat map of staying at home, not going out, and coming together. And so there we are somewhere between that really scary scenario with the red line and the first scenario that we'd like to achieve, which is this blue line. We have indications that we continue to see movement in that direction, especially in those areas that correlate with that map, the areas that overlap with the map that the governor showed you, Orleans, Jefferson, East Baton Rouge, Bossier. We're seeing those areas are really showing the impacts of actually limiting their contact with others. And our hope is that if we can continue to do that, and more importantly, spread that to the rest of the state so that everybody's taking this seriously and taking measures in their own neighborhoods, we will see that line continue to get closer and closer to the purple line. We will push away the peak. We will decrease the number of daily hospital admissions and make it more likely that we're actually able to have the surge measures that the governor's put in place actually be able to absorb those extra admissions. And we're showing you hospitalizations here, but as the governor said, the things that we're tracking through this model are hospitalizations and deaths. And we want to avert deaths most importantly as well. And so that, thank you, Governor.
Thank you. So at this time, we will take your questions, and I'm assuming you're going to have a number of questions for Dr. B on the modeling. Yes, ma'am.
So the way I'm reading that, we don't look very good, I guess is what I'm saying. Where we are right now, we're not even close to the social distancing, yet alone where we want to be in the strict shelter in place. It sounds like we're kind of not in a good place right now.
Yeah, and I don't want to speak for the governor, but I think that's why, you know, you've heard every day that he comes up to speak that this is still very concerning. This is still something that we're here at GOSEP every day looking at these numbers, talking about what measures can be taken. I agree with you. It's not good, but there is a glimmer of hope in that we can actually act to change where that slope is. We can act to move this this graph further over away from us and down. And that's incumbent upon us, and only citizens, we as citizens, can do that.
What does the midpoint projection mean that the peak would
yeah.
be?
So I mentioned that at baseline, we think that one individual could infect between 2 and 3, we'll say 2.4 people. That current midpoint is saying that one person right now with current measures is on average infecting about 2 other people. So we've nudged, but we need to go much further than that.
And that doesn't sound like a big difference to 2.5 to 2 people, but when the growth is exponential, those small differences make a really big difference in the aggregate and over time, because it isn't just that an individual might infect 3. Those people could turn around and infect 3 each and so forth. But if you get it down to 2.4 to 2 to 1.7, the lower that is, the better off you are. And I guess the thing that I've been trying to communicate consistently is that really, even under our best case scenario, it is an extremely tough situation for our hospitals. And we do expect that at some point we're going to exceed our capacity as it relates to beds and it relates to ventilators. And understand, we're comparing beds to COVID patients. You still have non-COVID people who have to be in the hospital. Heart attack victims, stroke victims, motor vehicle accident folks, there's all sorts of folks who have to be in the hospital. And so, and by the way, some of those people require ventilators too, and intensive care beds. And so this is really serious. We're doing this every way that we can to try to get the attention people to get more compliance so that we get the lowest transmission rate possible. And you know, I'm gratified that it appears over the last several days, the talking points that we've been delivering here have been echoed and reinforced by those coming out of Washington. So there is no daylight between what we're saying to you in the state of Louisiana and what's being said coming out of Washington, D.C. Yes, sir.
So going back to that strict shelter in place line, that's not you implementing stricter shelter in place rules. That's residents strictly following them.
That is if the people follow the order strictly that is already in place.
So
yes.
More so than they're doing.
Yeah, now. Yeah. So I mean that tells yes. I mean, and we can always have better compliance, even in places like New Orleans and Baton Rouge and Jefferson and Bossier, where it's better than elsewhere in the state. We know that it's not 100%, but so everybody can do better. But if we did adhere in a real positive way to the current orders around sheltering in place, keeping the schools closed, and that sort of thing, we would be down along the purple line. And so where we are right now is somewhere between the worst case scenario and the best case scenario. But to the degree we get compliance, we start moving and keep moving and get closer to the best case, and less people will die. That it is really that simple, because sometimes we can kind of lose ourselves in the numbers and the graphs and so forth. But to the degree that people comply with the orders, then less people are going to die. It is literally that simple. Jeff?
Would that mean the strict shelter in place would be in effect all the way to September, October, based on what that graph is showing?
Well, it would have to stay in place in order for that line to follow out all the way. Now, look, we don't know that we're ever going to get on that graph, and so we don't know whether we stay on the purple line or on the blue line or somewhere in between them. And that's why we have to continue to monitor where we are, and we will make announcements about what the future looks like based on where we believe that we are. And by the way, the underlying assumption for at least one of the models shown by the president the other day had the mitigation measures staying in place for the month of May. And I know his current emphasis, and by the way, my order too, it takes us through April the 30th. But in order to keep the deaths in the country between 100,000 and 240,000, which is what they were talking about, that assumes that the full mitigation measures stay in place through the month of May for the country, just so you understand that. Yes, sir?
As far as this modeling goes, how do you, in talking about the current midpoint projection, this, I assume, takes into account even when for Region 1 hospitals would be overwhelmed in early April? How does, like you mentioned yesterday, April 7 for vents, yeah. April 12 for beds? So this would just make that even worse. Up to 2,500 hospitalizations a day, that's with everything already overcapacitated.
All right. I'm not sure that I followed. He's shaking his head. I'm going to let Dr. Alex go.
Yeah, this is actually a point that, yeah, so this is a point we've been trying to make as well when we're talking about things like ventilators, and the governor has said this. It's not just that when we exceed ventilators, we need a few more and then we're good. It's that every day that number continues to increase, and it increases as an exponential function. That's why it's so critical that we do move off of that curve, because it's not just that that's going to be a peak that we're going to ride at. It's that we're still going to see more and more people needing those resources.
Yes, sir.
Governor, I know you were saying earlier that it was a few weeks ago, I think, that it was up to local municipalities to enforce that curfew. We have seen a number of parishes, including some in our mm-hmm. UN area, where like Iberville, they've started to implement a curfew. Would you recommend kind of that people get a curfew right now? Do you think that it would help with those numbers, or what's kind of your stance on that? And also, do you think that we could possibly be extending that stay-at-home order for possibly another month?
You know, first of all, we will cross the decision threshold about expanding when we get there. We're just not there yet. Secondly, I can see where you would potentially have less social contact with a curfew, but that just assumes that people wouldn't do during the daytime what they were going to do at night. If people are staying at home the way they're supposed to and only going out for essential work, if they're going to and from work, or going out for essential things like going to the grocery store and doing it once a week and so forth, the curfew wouldn't matter so much. Where the curfew, I think, could help is in conserving resources at the local level with respect to law enforcement. So maybe you have an overwhelmed law enforcement agency with a number of people in isolation or quarantine because of exposure or because of actual cases, then they would want to implement a curfew so that for certain time periods, maybe 10 at night to 5 in the morning, they would need fewer law enforcement officers on the streets because there would be less activity, and then they can marshal a greater percentage of their available deputies and so forth to work during the non-curfew period. That's why in the very first proclamation that I issued, we granted that authority to the chief law enforcement officers of the parishes, the sheriffs. And you always have mayors and parish presidents who can issue those curfews as well. Leo?
New York Mayor Blasio has called for a national draft of retired doctors and medical and healthcare workers, that kind of thing. And he wants them rushed to New York. Have y'all considered any kind of draft like that here? He's trying to force them back into service.
No, we haven't considered a draft, and I don't know how we would stand something like that up. But we have requested through the State Board of Medical Examiners and through the Nursing Board and through the hospitals that retired doctors and nurses and other healthcare professionals who are able and still have current certifications, especially, to come back to work and to go back to work at the entities where they previously worked. And we are not just asking for people to come in from Louisiana, but we're also reaching out to other states where they might have some medical professionals where their work isn't needed yet because they're not in the same place that we are presently, and asking those individuals come to Louisiana as well. And as much as I love New York, I'm not interested in having our professionals drafted and sent to New York, because we know we have real problems here in Louisiana in the not too distant future with respect to our capacity to deliver health care, and it is dependent on a number of things: beds, ventilators, and staff. And this really is one of the hardest things about standing up these standalone medical monitoring hospitals like we're doing in the convention center. You still have to staff it. And so you got to be able to find the doctors and nurses, and very, very difficult things to do. Melinda?
In terms of the modeling, if there is a glimmer of hope that shows that it's flattening a little bit, has that changed the projections for the exceeding of capacity in Region 1 for beds and ventilators? I know that that was kind of coming in the next week, that we would exceed the number of ventilators that are available. Has that pushed that back?
Well, we've announced over the last few days that we've had some reason to push those dates back already. I don't know that I'm prepared today and have been given information that says that it's different than I announced yesterday. And maybe you can talk to that.
You know, every day we look at the data, and we want to make sure that before we make a recommendation to the governor that we're seeing a solid trend. And so we're hoping that what we see continues. As I said earlier, I think that we're seeing some of that in areas across the state that are actually making these moves. And then as we feel that that's a credible enough move, we give that recommendation to the governor so he can make the decisions with that evidence.
I guess I'm just wondering, I mean, obviously hospitals are talking right now about trying to see if two patients can use one ventilator, and they're obviously talking about retrofitting other devices to work in some way like a ventilator. Are we still on track to see hospitals needing to use those kind of tools in the next week?
I don't know about the next week, but I think that we are. So we've also been aggressively pulling in anesthesia machines, you know, looking at anywhere we can get a ventilator, bringing as much of that to the front lines as possible. I do think, though, over the course of what's going to be going on in the state, we would very much, you know, probably need to be using those things.
And our ability to be successful in getting future allocations of ventilators out of the strategic national stockpile will depend, at least in part, on our having done those things. Because we are having to justify our requests with ventilators from that stockpile with information about the actions we have taken to make maximum use of all these breathing machines and these anesthesia ventilators, to identify them, round them up, and get them to our Tier 1 hospitals, and we're doing that right now. And I do have a little bit of good news on the ventilator front. 100 ventilators did come in earlier today. They're en route to Region 1 hospitals as we speak. And those came not from the stockpile, but from a vendor of ventilators that we've been able to get ventilators from. And that is the, I think, about 300 ventilators that we've sourced from this one vendor over the last 3 weeks. And we're going to keep doing that everywhere that we can. And so when we do that, we generate just a little bit more capacity. And then tomorrow, they will look not just at deaths and hospitalizations, they're also going to look at the new number of ventilators on hand. And that's why we keep inching back. But even when you're inching back in time, in terms of the date at which we're going to exceed our capacity, there does come a time in every single one of these models that we're seeing where we do exceed our capacity to deliver health care. And that's what I'm trying to make sure people understand. And the degree to which we exceed that capacity will depend upon our social distancing and whether we adhere to the mitigation measures. And we literally have it within our collective power to decide whether more or fewer people will die from COVID-19. It is just that simple. And I know people aren't accustomed to it, and look, it's hard for me to even say it, but those are the facts of the matter. Yes, sir.
What is our capacity? How many hospital beds do we have in Region 1?
Oh, I didn't bring that information here with me today. And
it changes. I mean, it changes every day. So I think in aggregate, there's something around maybe 4,000 that we're looking at in ICU beds, maybe 10,000 total beds. We can get that information for you, and it's on our website. And actually, it's on our dashboard now, available beds and available vents. But again, these are daily admissions. I just want to make that clear.
Right,
we're talking
about. If I'm understanding that correctly, is that you say you got 2,000 today and 1,900 yesterday, and that's 3,900 that we're taught.
In a two-day period.
In a two-day period. So it accumulates.
Yes.
Yeah, and you have to be careful because you have to back out the NICU beds, for example, because they're not going to be suitable for the patients coming in. With COVID-19 either. And I do want to point out, it's not just that we're surging now as it relates to ventilators and our medical monitoring hospital, which, by the way, I think is going to be open for you all tomorrow in New Orleans if you want to go down to take a look at that, and I hope you will. We also have asked our hospitals to expand their capacity within their existing footprint. And they're doing everything that they can to stand up more ICU beds in New Orleans with Ochsner, in New Orleans with LCMC, here in Baton Rouge with Our Lady of the Lake in Baton Rouge General, up in Shreveport. So we've been taking advantage of the time that we've had in order to expand our ICU beds as well on existing footprint, because that's the best setting to get this health care, and that's the easiest place to staff those additional beds, but not easy. When you go out and do that standalone facility, that's when it becomes really, really difficult, and that's also why those will be the less acute, non-fragile patients who don't need to be on a ventilator. They're not yet ready to go home, but if we can take them out of the Tier 1 hospital sooner, then that's a bed that opens up sooner and more frequently than it otherwise would, and you can service more individuals who need to be in the hospital and receive that top line care at a Tier 1 hospital. Yes, sir.
As far as your conversations with the White House President, Vice President, obviously throughout this outbreak, there have been more focuses and priorities as we go on day to day. What right now in your conversations, in your most recent conversations with the White House, is the focus for you as far as federal assistance or help with
the it is the same thing I've been saying here for several days now. The biggest issue in the nearest term is ventilator capacity. And so we keep making our case. We know that there remain several thousand ventilators in the strategic national stockpile. We're doing everything we can to put ourselves in position for an additional allocation and a timely allocation of those ventilators. And of course, there's a lot of other things that we talk about. But I want to tell you and the people of Louisiana, these conversations that I'm having with the president and the vice president and with the head of FEMA and so forth, they're not unlike all the conversations happening with the governors of every state. And we have New Jersey and New York out there and additional places coming online with hotspots. And so we're all competing for very limited resources, which highlights what I've also been saying about the primary difference between managing this public health emergency response and managing the recovery from a natural disaster. In a time of a natural disaster, you typically get the attention of sister states who send things that you need, and the federal government is focused squarely on Louisiana. That's just not able to happen right now. And so we're doing the very best we can, and I appreciate all the work that we've been able to do with our federal partners, and they have been responsive. Am I frustrated because we don't have more? Yes. But am I mad at anybody? No. This is just the way things are right now, and we're going to continue to be as aggressive as we can to get the resources that we need and as soon as possible. Yes, sir.
Have you heard anything else from the president about another COVID hospital or anything like that?
No.
No.
Okay. And I know the president was talking about the assistance that he has sent to Louisiana with respect to the COVID hospitals. And so that assistance right now is through FEMA. We're setting up the convention center. We will have 1,000 beds ready by Sunday. We will have a second 1,000 beds ready by April the 20th. 500 of those beds are coming from the two field medical stations that he did approve for us. And that's not staffed, but those are the beds, very, very helpful. And then we have a medical detachment coming from the Navy, from Jacksonville, Florida. We don't know precisely the number of people. We have their advanced team in New Orleans now, about 50 people. We think at the end of the day, it's gonna be closer to 200 altogether. And we know that yesterday we were given clearance that they can, in fact, work at our personal housing unit, which is gonna have about 250 patients who likely have COVID, but they don't have the positive test result back, but they require hospitalization. So those are the things that we've gotten from the federal government as it relates to the Morial Convention Center. Very, very helpful. And that's what the president was referring to.
Another
question. I know your main priority is limiting COVID-19 deaths, but how much do you think about the people as with your stay-at-home order now extended through April, the potential, I know you're not ready to go there, potential it's another month after that. What do you say to those people who are now out of a job because of this and all the factors? Yeah. How much do you think about that? I know your focus is on COVID-19, but so many people are at home wondering where my next paycheck's coming from.
Well, first of all, we think about it a great deal. And I get briefed on it every single day, the number of unemployment claims. I make sure that we waived, for example, the period of time that you have to wait before you file your initial claim and when you get the benefit. I've waived the job search requirements that go with that. We're working hard to expedite taking those claims, getting those payments made. We're working with the federal government for the enhanced benefit of $600 a week that we will add to the $247 state benefit. We're doing those things. We are working with small businesses to make sure that they take advantage of the loans through the SBA. That can be forgivable to the extent that I spoke about them earlier. We stood up a loan guarantee program here in Louisiana where the state is going to incur 20% of the risk of those loans in order to spur our banks to give small businesses loans of up to $100,000 where for 3 months there's no interest and there's no payments due, and the interest rate after that is 3.5%, which is less than what they're going to be able to get through the SBA. And we're leaning forward, trying to do everything that we can to stand this economy back up. Look, I just got a report about what our true February unemployment numbers were, and they dropped by 1.3% in Louisiana. We had the fourth fastest growing economy in the country when this hit. We had an unemployment rate for seasonally unadjusted numbers that dropped to 4.3%, I think it was. And so we were doing really, really well. We want to get back there just as soon as we possibly can. But I will tell you, you're not going to restart the economy when you don't have the hospital capacity to render life-saving care to thousands of Louisianans, not just in New Orleans, but all over the state. And so we do have to get through this first, and we're going to be leaning forward. And we're consulting with people in the private sector to figure out what we can do to best position us to move forward as quickly as possible. But these are very, very difficult challenges, and the question was, do I think about them? Yeah, I think about them, and I don't just think about them, we're working to make sure we're doing what we can now and that we're positioning ourselves to open the economy back up and get people back to work and get businesses open again just as soon as we possibly can. But the virus, to a large degree, is gonna determine when that is. I mean, that's just the fact of the matter. Look, I want to thank you all again. We don't have another press briefing scheduled. I can assume that we will do one for sure on Monday. You are invited to go down to the Morial Convention Center tomorrow, and I know there'll be more information forthcoming about that. If we have a need to brief you all either tomorrow or on Sunday, we certainly will, and we will put out that notice and give you all plenty of time to get here. So again, I want to thank those Louisianans who are working hard to comply with the stay-at-home order and social distancing and all the mitigation measures. I want to strongly encourage those who are not to do better. And as always, I ask people to lift one another up in prayer. Together, we're going to get through this. Louisianans are strong, resilient people, and that's going to serve us well over the coming weeks and months. And we are going to get through this. I have no doubt about that. But it's going to still, it's still the case that it's going to get worse before it gets better. But we have the power to determine just how much worse it gets. That's what I need people to understand, and that's what I need you members of the press to help with the messaging, because that remains the most important message for people to get all across Louisiana, because there's actually hope in that. We're not consigned to some future that we have no control over. We can do something, and the sooner we do it, the better, as you saw from the modeling. Thank you very much.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
O'Reilly Auto Parts.